Right, Parshas Bahar, small Parsha, because again we're in a leap year, so a lot of the Parshas are separated. The ones that are normally together in a normal year, particularly come in the book of Vayikra, and they make very long Parshas, but Bahar is a small one, short one. But what I want to do today actually is a little bit something different. I'm going to do something small on the Parsha in the beginning, and then I want to do something on Lag BaOmer, share with you quite a beautiful idea that I came across. Being that tomorrow night is Lag BaOmer, so I thought it would be a good idea. But let's just start with the Parsha first. So the Parsha famously, of course, talks about Shemitah, right? Which I couldn't not talk about because this year is the year of Shemitah. Kiara, you just come from Israel, haven't you? It's quite a complicated year, I understand, right? So in Israel, if you observe Shemitah, it's quite a complicated thing. Different opinions, different systems of how you do it, different ways you have to eat the food. You can't just, it's like a whole thing. You can't just throw away food, right? You got to have a separate, you got to wait. It's like if you have leftovers food, if it's from Shemitah, it's got the holiness of Shemitah, and therefore you have to wait till it decomposes and then throw it away. A whole story. I'm not so familiar myself because I've never spent time in Israel and Shemitah here, so I don't know. But anyway, but it comes from this week's Parsha, and it's a law of Shemitah that Torah gives. Let's have a look. Let's have a look at the first one in the handout. And then I'm just going to connect it with something at the very end of the Parsha. So the Torah says that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, and he told him to tell the Jewish people when they come to the land of Israel to have the law of Shemitah. But the way the pasuk is phrased is like this. If you look at number one, Dabar el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the b'nei Yisrael, ve'omarta aleim, and say to them, ki savoyu el ha'aretz, when you come to the land, asher ani noisein lachem, that I'm giving you, v'shofso ha'aretz Shabbos l'Hashem. The land should rest a Shabbos to Hashem. So the Torah refers to the year of Shemitah, which is every 7 years where it's forbidden to plant and sow the field and so on, and everything has to grow wild. The Torah refers to it as a year of Shabbos, right? Rona, you always tell me back on the farm they used to let every few years they used to let the land lie fallow, right? So that's true. It's actually beneficial for the land, but although the commentaries tell us that's actually not necessarily why we have the mitzvah of Shemitah, because if it was just for agricultural benefit, it'd be a much better system. It'd be a rotation system where like every year you'd have some of the fields like fallow and then plant the others. But this is different. This is really a mitzvah bitochen, it's a mitzvah munah. And once every 7 years you really have to surrender to Hashem and not plant the field and rely on Hashem that He's gonna provide, right? So that's quite a strong mitzvah. Okay. But it's called the mitzvah of Shabbos. Now the Mefarshim ask a question, a very, very famous question many Mefarshim ask, that actually it's really strange the way the pasuk is phrased, right? I'm just taking one detail out of the Shemitah concept. Because it says, speak to the B'nai Yisrael and tell them, when they come to the land Hashem will give you, the land shall rest a Shabbos to Hashem. Now we know that the mitzvah of Shemitah only began when the Jews came into Israel. It's an Israel mitzvah, meaning it's one of these mitzvahs only kept in the land of Israel. Right? But we know how the mitzvah works. You've got to have 6 years first. So first they had to work the land for 6 years and then observe the year of Shemitah, right? But the pasuk jumps right in. The pasuk says, when you come to the land will rest the Shabbos. That's not what happened. The first after, huh?
So when they went in, they did work for
6 years. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Right, they first worked for 6 years. Then the Shabbos year. Right? And the pasuk continues. I don't know the Chumash front of me, but the pasuk continues afterwards. She'ishonim tizra sedecha, for 6 years you shall sow your field and so on and so forth. And then you should, 70, you shouldn't work, right? But here it jumps in right away. So one simple explanation is that obviously the Torah is not saying that you have to keep the Shemitah right away when you come to Israel, because it's not the way it is. You have to actually work 6 years first. But it's kind of telling us the goal. You know, sometimes the Torah says something before something else because it tells us what the goal is, right? The goal is the Shemitah year. Why? Because the Shemitah year was a holy year. It was a year of Shabbos, a year of connection to Hashem. And in a sense, this, just like Shabbos, just like the weekly Shabbos, right? When we work throughout the week, everything revolves around Shabbos, right? I think I've shared this with you before. In Hebrew, we don't have names for the days, right? You know that? What's Sunday in Hebrew? Yom Rishon. First day. First day, second day, third day. First day to what? It's not the first day of creation. What does it mean, first day? What's that? First day of what?
After Shabbos.
After Shabbos. First day towards the next Shabbos. Because Shabbos is called the seventh day, right? In other words, everything we do revolves around Shabbos. The whole week, what's the goal? Yes, we work, it's true. What's the goal of the week? To get to Shabbos. So that we should have the connection to Hashem that we experience on Shabbos. Same thing over here. The goal is the Shemitah year, right? The goal is the year of Shemitah. So when we come into Eretz Yisrael, we come to the land of Israel, of course we have to work 6 years, but the Torah is laying down right away what the goal is. So when you come to the land, I'm going to give you this gift of a year of Shabbos LaHashem, a year which is Shabbos to Hashem. And then the Torah says, now let me tell you how to get there. First you have to work for 6 years, and then you'll have Shabbos, right? That's the one idea. But on a deeper level, the Baba Chereba once explained the following. That we know Rashi says that the term that the Torah uses here is Shabbos LaHashem, right? Where else do we find that expression? By the regular Shabbos, right? And we find the Rishonim, the Ramban, and others also talk about this, that there's this deep connection between the Shemitah year in Israel and between the Shabbos that we keep every week. They're both called the Shabbos. A different type of Shabbos, but it's all Shabbos, right? This is a Shabbos for the person, this is a Shabbos for the land, this is a Shabbos all in Israel. In a way, it's a deeper level of surrender because you can't work at all for the whole year. On the other hand, actually, you can do more because it's not like Shabbos, you can't put on lights, all that, you know, it's different, right? They're different, but they're both a concept of Shabbos. Now, with Shabbos, we find an interesting thing. Why do we keep Shabbos? What's the reason for Shabbos?
Rest.
Yeah, no. No, you can rest.
Together for ladies together.
Yeah, that's great, but why? What's reminding us of? Go ahead. I didn't know what you said before.
I think we're commanded to.
Yeah, that's why we should keep every mitzvah. But the Torah gives explanation a little bit, right? That's a side benefit. Well, true, right? That's an interesting concept, by the way. There are many mitzvahs like that. They have amazing benefits, but that's not the reason we keep them.
Well, I was just giving
it to my children. Because we have to keep Shabbos even if there's no family getting together, right? Because actually, it's not about, Shabbos is about stopping, right? It's about being. I think I've told you the story of my mother. This is 1955, right? She grew up in South Africa. She traveled to America to look for a shidduch. Anyway, she came back home. It's a whole story. The flight was supposed to arrive on Friday. They went through. Where did they go through? Nairobi, I think. Anyway, there was a Jewish community there. It was getting late. The Jewish community said they had nowhere to put anyone off. It was a strange thing. Anyway, she got to Johannesburg, and it was just as Shabbos had started, and she came through customs. And she had to sign, and she wouldn't sign. Shabbos had started. And my aunt was there to pick her up from the airport. She couldn't sign, so they said, well, you can't go out there. So she said, okay, so I'm not going out. Right? So it was a long story. So what happened was, they put her in a room, and those days it was considered, I don't think nowadays we'll get so much attention, but those days it was, since Africa at that time, it was considered like a crazy story. My grandfather went to shul the next morning, he sees these big posters, you know, he used to have these big headline posters in the newspapers. Remember them? They used to be stuck. Girl refuses to leave airport. Made all the papers, headlines, right? So she sat in a room with my aunt, had no wine, had no chalas, nothing. They had a few nuts and chocolates, I think, and that was the Shabbos, right? In fact, there was one priest who wrote in the newspaper a letter. My mother has all the cuttings. He wrote a letter, giving his own flock a bit of a telling off. And he says, you know, I've been trying to get people to come to church on Sunday, and I can't get there for an hour or two, and here a girl is prepared to give up a whole 24 hours for a God. Right? So, no, I bring it out because there was no family time. They didn't have the family meals, no chalas. No. But Shabbos is Shabbos. It doesn't matter where you are, you know what I'm saying? But why do we keep Shabbos?
Isn't it about separating the day, your working week, and your...
Yes, but where does it come... where does it come from? What's the source of Shabbos? Right? So the Torah gives us two... Yeah, I mean, all those things are included in Shabbos. But the Torah gives us two sources. One is Zeicher L'Maaseh Bereishis, is to remember the creation, right? And this is what we do on Friday night. We talk about this a lot. That's what we do in Kiddush. That God created the world in 6 days. The seventh day He rested, and so on. Whatever rested means, but that's the point, right? So it's to believe in the creation of the world, right? So it's, yeah. The second one we say is Zeicher L'Yitzias Mitzrayim. We say that in Kiddush on Friday night, and we say it during the morning davening. We keep Shabbos to remember the exodus of Egypt. In other words, to remember about becoming Hashem's nation, and Rosh Hashanah, and the Shabbos is the time that we connect to Hashem in a deeper way, right? So he points out an interesting thing. What's the difference between the two? The difference between these two reasons is like this. That on one hand, the Talmud says, the Gemara says like this, that Shabbos makatsha v'kaima. Shabbos has an automatic holiness to it. In other words, whether we keep Shabbos or not, Shabbos is always holy. And it was that way from the time the world was created. 6 days Hashem created the world, seventh day He rested, which rested means on a deeper level that the world was in a higher state and a higher level, more godly and so on and so forth. And that's been happening every single 7 days since the world was created. Nothing to do with what we do and how we observe. Shabbos has an intrinsic holiness, and it's an intrinsic holiness that Hashem gives us. Right? That's connected to the reason that we keep Shabbos Zeicher L'Maaseh Bereishis, to remember the creation of the world. Yeah? But then there's a second part of Shabbos that we find that although Shabbos has its intrinsic own holiness, but there's something we can do to make it even holier. In other words, we contribute to the Shabbos. Right? We prepare for Shabbos, we look forward to Shabbos, we learn about Shabbos, and when it comes to Shabbos, we experience Shabbos. And when we are, as the Gemara likes to use the expression, we bring a deeper dimension of holiness into the Shabbos. Right? So we have these two ideas that sometimes what happens is there's certain things that Hashem gives us to sort of kickstart the process. There's a gift He gives us that says when you come Shabbos, there's like, what's the word I'm looking for? You're ahead of the game already. In other words, there's already a bonus to start with. You don't have to create the Shabbos. The Shabbos is created for you. Yet, you need to keep the Shabbos and become holy and put holiness in the Shabbos to achieve even a greater dimension of Shabbos. Right? And that's connected to the reason of Zeicher L'Yitzias Mitzrayim, because going out of Egypt meant becoming Hashem's nation. So we had to become Hashem's nation. That's the second reason of Shabbos, right? So he says like this, this is what the Torah over here means. The same thing, because Shemitah is the same as Shabbos, so the same thing happens. Hashem says you're going to come to the land and you're going to have a Shabbos. Meaning there's a certain level of Shemitah, a certain Kedusha in Shemitah which you don't have to work for. I'll just give it to you. Just like on the regular Shabbos. But then there's a second level of Shemitah that you have to work for. And that's what the Torah says. 6 days you shall work and you should prepare and then experience. Because that's the second dimension of Shabbos. So the reason the Torah says when you come to the land I'll give you a Shabbos, without even telling us how we get to that Shabbos, because it's hinting to the first concept of Shabbos, the gift of Shabbos, as opposed to the contribution that we make to Shabbos. Okay? So I just thought I'd share that idea with you, because especially this year, we cannot go by this parsha, even though we're not going to focus on the parsha the whole shiur, without talking about Shemitah a little bit. Okay. Lag BaOmer. So I'm going to share with you an idea that I've taken once again from, I did this last week as well, I took it from, based on, I should say, with a couple of extra things in it, but based on an essay by the Shvile Pinchas, Rav Pinchas Friedman, who I explained last week as a big Rav in Eretz Yisrael. And it's, you have to concentrate, because I hope I'll be able to give this over clearly, because it's like a whole bunch of different things together and it creates a whole picture. It's beautiful what he does. So let's just give a bit of a context. First of all, just a background. So we know that we have the Omer, we have the time of the Omer, which is called Sfiras Omer, the count, we count the Omer, starting the second day of Pesach all the way to Shavuot. But we know we also have the added thing, that's the counting of the Omer, that's generally. But then we also have the added idea of the fact that during the Omer we have a period called, which we call Avilut. In other words, we observe partial mourning, right? Partial mourning because Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students and they died all in this period, then respect each other and so on and so forth. And then That's why we keep Pashim mourning. But it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that Lag BaOmer we ease the mourning. Lag BaOmer we actually celebrate, or we ease the mourning, whatever the case is. Two reasons are given. We're going to discuss one of them in greater depth today. But one reason is because we say that the students stopped dying during that time, right? And also because it's the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the students of Rabbi Akiva, the remaining students, and he was the author of the Zohar, and he began the whole process of the dissemination of what we call Pnimius of Torah, the esoteric part of Torah, the Kabbalistic part of Torah. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, on his day that he passed away, which is Lag BaOmer, he actually instructed his students. He said he's going to reveal things he hasn't revealed up till now. And he said that on this day he had reached an unbelievable, perfect state of bond and union with Hashem. And he said that's something that he's not just experiencing himself, that's something that he can impart and transmit to the world for the benefit of the world. And he said that every year on Lag BaOmer this will reoccur, so to speak. And therefore he instructed and asked that the day of his passing should be a day of great celebration. Right? That's why it's called the Yom Simchasoi Shel Rashbi, the day of celebration of the Rashbi. A lot of people go to Meiron, of course. As we know, last year, unfortunately, was a tremendous tragedy there. This year, there's a bit of controversy around it. Anyway, hopefully they'll work it out, and Hashem should help us all go through peacefully. But there's a big minhag to go to his kever, or wherever you are, to have a simcha, to enjoy, and celebrate, and participate in the celebration of the Rashbi. Okay. That's the background to Lag BaOmer. But we know that everything in Torah is exact, and the fact that it comes out of Lag BaOmer is very significant. And there's many, many, in other words, the fact that this whole thing happened on the 33rd day of the Omer is very, very important. And there are many, many different explanations that are given. And I'm going to share with you one idea today. Okay. So this starts with something that the Chassam Sofer says. Just to remind you, the Chassam Sofer was a great Hungarian rabbi. Lived about a couple hundred years ago. A very, very great person. And he said the following. And you have to look at your handout to get this properly. He said, if you ever look at Lag BaOmer, right? Lag means Lamed Gimel is number 3. Lamed Gimel is 33, right? But if you write out the words Lamed and Gimel, you see how I've done it there? Right? The Chassam Sofer says this. Now, it's a gematria. And I think I've shared this with you before. Gematrias are not something you just make up. I mean, anyone can make up gematrias. We have a big gematria expert in town. Loves gematrias. But these are gematrias that come from like some sofer, and these are very, very important. You can share it with him after, he'll love this. Lamed Gimel, right, says that the if you write out the words Lamed Gimel, the gematria is 147. What's 147? It's the gematria of the years of Yaakov Avinu. Now, that's not going to make any sense just yet, but hold it there, okay? So Lamed Gimel, Lag BaOmer is the gematria of 147, the years of Yaakov Avinu. Okay, we need to put that on hold. Okay. Now, there's another, what's the connection between Lag BaOmer and Yaakov? So the Chassam Sofer, it looks like, is attaching himself to something that the Arizal says. Because we find in the Arizal already that Lag BaOmer has a source in the Torah. Even though, of course, something happened many, many, many years later. But we know that everything that happened in the Jewish experience obviously is hinted in the Torah. And we find a very interesting source for Lag BaOmer, which we have to understand and develop, but it's also a story got to do with Yaakov Avinu. Now, let's just give the background to the story. So Yaakov Avinu spent 20 years by his father-in-law, Lavan, who was very cruel to him, he was very not nice to him. He was a con man and so on and so forth. He married two of his daughters, Rachel and Leah, right? And at the end, Yaakov Avinu he worked 7 years for Rachel, 7 years for Leah, 6 years for a bunch of different changes of salary, and which Lavan was really driving him crazy with. And then at the end, Yaakov Avinu picked up his family and just left. He knew Lavan wouldn't let him, so he just left. Right? Lavan finds out about it and he pursues him. Right? He runs after him and he was actually planning to harm him. And then the night before Hashem, as he camped just before he was about to get to Yaakov, Hashem appears to Lavan, and he says, just watch it, you don't touch him, and you don't affect Yaakov at all, right? Don't talk to him, mitoiv adra. Not good, not bad, just say goodbye kind of thing, right? Lavan then catches up to Yaakov, And he says to him, in like a real politician, he says to him, why did you leave? If I would have known you were going to leave, I would have made you a major farewell party with drums and flutes and who knows what, and instruments. Obviously, that was all not true. And then he says the following. Have a look at number four, right? He says, really? He says, and he says, you know, why don't you even let me say goodbye to my children, my grandchildren, you know, that kind of thing. They're mine, you know, right? And he says to him like this. Then he gives him a bit of a thing, and he says, this is Lavan talking to Yaakov. He says, "Lesh yesh lekel yodi lasis imachem ra. I have strength in my hand to cause harm to you. But I want you to know that v'lekei avichem emesh omer elai. Lemar, your God, the God of your father, came to me yesterday, and he said, Yishomer lechom idamer Yaakov mitoy v'ra. Be careful, don't talk to Yaakov, not good, not bad. So I'm going to have to hold back, right? And therefore he says to Yaakov, he says, v'ato, if that's the case, you know what? Let's just make a covenant between us, and this covenant will be v'hoyo le'ed beini uveinecha. This will be a testimony, a symbol of protection between us, friendship between us, a covenant between us, and so on. Okay, so what happens? Have a look at the next pasuk. Pasuk memhei. Vayikach Yaakov Evan. So Yaakov took a stone. Vayirimeho matseva, and he erected a monument. Okay, part one. Part two. To turn over the page. By Yomer Yaakov le'echov, Yaakov said to his brothers, the Mefarshim say he was talking to his sons actually, Liktu avanim, gather stones. By Yikhu avanim, so they did, they gathered stones. What did they do with the stones? By Yasu gal, they made a heap of stones as like a barrier. By Yoichlu shom ala gal, and they all ate a meal next to this gal. Are you starting to see the connection yet? Gal, Lamed Gimel. Okay, yeah, okay. No. Lavan Yogasa Hadusa. Lavan called this some Aramaic name. It's printed in the Torah, Yogasa Hadusa. He called this heap of stones Gal Eid. Gal Eid is made of two words. Gal means a heap of stones. Eid means testimony, right? And he said, this will be aid, and I didn't print all out. Sukkim, he says, Yaakov said, this heap of stones will be a testimony for between us that we don't cross, we don't bother each other, and we have a cordial relationship. Okay. Says the Arizal, that this pasuk that says, ad hagal hazeh, aid hagal hazeh, that this gal, this heap of stones, a testimony and a symbol between Yaakov and Lavan, is a hint to Lag BaOmer. So he says. That's what the result says. We'll see. Everything will fall into place. Right? That's what the result says. And this is brought down in many places. The Baditcha, the Levi, Gedushas Levi brings it down. The Balatanya brings it down. It's brought down in many, many places. This Arizal, the Lag BaOmer, is hinted in the Torah and the story of Lavan, Gal 8. The Mor V'Shamesh, one of the great Hasidic masters says, he said, what happened was that Lavan really wanted to, what we call in a Kabbalistic term, he wanted to be Mo'oyrei Rudin. He wanted to bring up judgment. He wanted to bring up harshness, accusations. We know that one of the things that happen in the world often, like I'll give you an example. So just to be clear. We have this concept, there's two forces in the world. The forces of din, which is justice and harshness. And there's the forces of chesed, kindness and compassion. And din, rachmim, right? And we know sometimes those that oppose holiness or the Jewish people try, subconsciously or consciously, they try to activate the forces of judgment, right? So to give you an example of how this works. So for example, when Yidden were going out of Mitzrayim, they came to the Yamsuf, right? Came to the sea. The Gemara says that there was a tremendous commotion in heaven. There were those angels that are the forces, represent the forces of evil, or the forces that are against the Jewish people. And they came to God and they said, why are you favoring the Jewish nation? Halalu oyda v'yidzarallah. They both idol worshippers. We know the Jews in Egypt were assimilated. They served idols, right? That process is they were trying to highlight justice. They were trying to highlight the forces of din. When the forces of din are highlighted, they will become very vulnerable and become susceptible to negativity. So Lavan by coming and pursuing Yaakov, there's a Kabbalistic side to Yovan. He was trying to be Ma'orer Din. He was trying to bring about Din on Yaakov. And we say Din on Yaakov, we mean whatever Yaakov stands for, which is the father of the Jewish nation. We are called B'nai Yisrael because we are the children of Yaakov, right? And what Yaakov did was, Yaakov, by erecting this gal, by erecting this barrier between him and Lavan, he neutralized, he sweetened the din, as we use in the Kabbalistic phrase, right? And he transformed the din into rachamim. Says the Mor v'Shamesh, and this concept of the revelation of rachamim and bracha in the world happens every Lag BaOmer. Right? In other words, Yaakov, what he did was, he created some sort of formula of bringing rachamim, bringing goodness, compassion, chesed into the world by erecting this gal, by erecting this barrier between him and Lavan to ward off the forces of justice. And that compassion, that rachamim which Yaakov activated, is then revealed every year on Lag BaOmer. As we know, the Lag BaOmer, there's many, many, many stories of great tzaddikim, how Lag BaOmer, they would give brachas, there was a special bracha associated with the day of Lag BaOmer. Yeah? There were many tzaddikim, particularly, would give brachas for children. It was a known thing that there were many, many people who were infertile and had problems giving children, and they were answered dafke by davening on Lag BaOmer. Many, many, many things like that. We find this a tremendous energy of rachamim and chesed on the day of Lag BaOmer. Okay. So therefore, without going any deeper, which we are going to go a lot deeper, of course, we can already start to see a little bit what was behind what the Chassam Sofer said. That Lag BaOmer is the same gematria as the years of Yaakov Avinu, because now we know that the Arizal creates connection between Yaakov Avinu and Lag BaOmer, which through this gal, through this heap of stones that he erected, and by what the Mor v'Shamesh explains, that it's not just a word in the Torah and it's connected to this, it's actually a whole process of bringing in rachamim to fight and to ward off the forces of judgment that Lavan wanted to create and energize. And that happens every year on Lag BaOmer, so therefore that's the connection between Yaakov and Lag BaOmer. Hence, if you write out the words Lag Lamed Gimel, like we did before, you make the gematria of the years of Yaakov, because he was the one to start this process of the rachamim connected with the gal, which is revealed in Lag BaOmer. Okay, that's part one. Let's take it much more than that. Let's take a lot further, as the Shvi'i Pinchas does. And he brings the following idea. He says, you know, let's have a look. Let's go back to Lag BaOmer, right? We say one of the reasons that brought in Shulchan Aruch, it says that Rabbi Akiva lost his 24,000 students, right? And Lag BaOmer, we don't mourn. In fact, there's celebration. Why? Because it says the wording in Shulchan Aruch is Pasku Bilamus. They stopped dying. They stopped dying. In fact, according to some, that's why some people keep the Omer, the morning of the Omer, from the beginning of the Omer till Lag BaOmer, right? Because after Lag BaOmer, according to some, they stopped dying, which means there was no more dying after Lag BaOmer. So the Mefarshim asked the question, especially one of the great halachic commentators, called the Prichadosh, and he says, he doesn't understand. When there's a plague, right, that threatens an entire population, let's say, right? And midway it stops, and it doesn't take hold of anyone else. So we understand they're the combination of tragedy and joy. Mourning for those that did die, celebration for those that escaped it, right? That's nice, that makes sense, right? But here the whole thing doesn't make sense. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim. They all did something wrong. As we said last week, one of the reasons was because they didn't respect each other, whatever the case is. So what did Hashem do? He punished them. He sent an epidemic in these 24,000 Talmidim. They all started to die. How many of them died? All of them. So what do you mean they stopped dying? They stopped dying. There's no one to die. So obviously they stopped dying. What's a celebration? It's tragedy, not celebration. You get the question? It's a very fundamental question, because everyone always says, you know, like, bummer, they stopped dying, so therefore, you know, it's more. You can celebrate. There's no celebration. They all died, every single one of them. Right? So the Prichadosh says the following. And the Chidor brings this as well. He said like this. We have to understand the context here, what happened, right? Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim. He had established Torah at its highest level. Don't forget who Rabbi Akiva was yet. He was 40 years old and he was illiterate. And he started to learn and he became the big Rosh Hashiva and he went away for 24 years and his wife let him go away. The whole thing, right? The whole business, the whole story in the Gemara. And he came back with 24,000 Talmidim. This was going to be the shining light of Klal Yisrael. And then they all died. So you can imagine Rabbi Akiva, what's he going to do now? Right? A normal person just gives up. Failed experiment. Right? What did Rabbi Akiva do? He said no. Right away, no. He went, it says the Gemara, he went to his colleagues in the south. He took five new students. One of them happened to be Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He gave them smicha and started to talk to them and told them that they are now tasked with the job of restoring Torah to the Jewish people. Because the Gemara says that after the 24,000 Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died, the world was desolate and we were under threat of losing Jewish knowledge. You have to understand who Rabbi Akiva was. Rabbi Akiva is credited for the main communicator and transmitter of the oral Torah. Right? In many Sfarim, he's compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave us, when Hashem gave us the Torah on Shavuos, he gave both. Obviously, he gave the written Torah and the oral Torah, but the emphasis then was the written Torah. Right? Who was the main sage of the oral Torah? We credit that to Rabbi Akiva. And he was like, and now he has 24,000 Talmidim and they all die, which means oral Torah is under threat. We can't live without oral Torah. We don't have without the oral Torah, we don't have the written Torah either. That's another discussion, but we won't have any Torah. And the world can't survive, the Jewish nation can't survive without Torah, and the world can't survive without Torah.
When was he alive, Rabbi Akiva?
Around year 100 or something, around there. Right? Towards the end of around 70. He was around by the destruction the Roman rule, by the destruction of the Second Temple. It's about year 70. Like that. Right? So what does he do? He doesn't give up. Instantaneously doesn't give up. He takes five students, says, you're in charge now. You've got to make sure Torah. And they restore Torah at an unbelievable level. I mean, these were five of the greatest. Right, one of them was Rabbi Meir. The Talmud tells us every time you see an anonymous Mishnah in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, which doesn't have a name to it, it's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi, they were authors of the Sifri, the Sifra, great people. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, unbelievable. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who was the greatest in both the revealed halachic part of Torah and the esoteric part of Torah. There's almost no page in the Gemara where you don't have Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Besides the fact that he authored the Zohar, and he was the author of the start of the process of the study of the deeper part of Torah and so on and so forth, right? And he just reestablished and the light came back to the world. So the Chidah says, and the Prichadosh alludes to this, that's what it means they stopped dying. Doesn't mean that they stopped dying means that those that didn't die. No, they all died. But the real death would have been giving up. That would have been the real death. Lag BaOmer is the simcha that Rabbi Akiva right away went and made sure that they wouldn't die anymore. Meaning that Torah wouldn't stop. And with unbelievable resilience and faith and bitachon to Hashem, he accepted what Hashem has done and moved on. Went and took five Talmidim and restored Torah to Klal Yisrael. It's unbelievable. Right? Which is why one of the reasons that Lag BaOmer is such a day of celebration. Even, right? Now the Kaf HaChaim and other Kabbalists talk about the following. They say, this is what Lag BaOmer is Kabbalistically. You know, one of the reasons, because, you know, we say that the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died, right, before Lag BaOmer. They all died. So if they had sinned, why did they all die in these few weeks? They all died like in 33 days. Why? Because Kabbalistically, I'm not sure exactly why this is, but Kabbalistically, apparently, this concept of din, this concept of judgment prevails during the Omer. The Omer is a time of din. Right? And that's why, in other words, we find a concept in Torah that sometimes someone can do something wrong and Hashem won't do anything to that person, even if it's a big tzaddik, even though he holds tzaddikim to a greater standard, but he won't do anything. But then when there comes a time where there's anyway an energy of justice, of din, it becomes worse. In other words, then all of a sudden they get affected, right? So the Kabbalists say that until Lag BaOmer there was an energy of din. And Lag BaOmer, where Lag BaOmer did was, it sweetened the din. It transforms the din. And that's connected with Rabbi Akiva did and Lag BaOmer, that what he did was, he went and he transformed the whole thing. Up until then, it was just about din and justice and harshness, and the Talmidim died. What did Rabbi Akiva do in Lag BaOmer? He refused to give in to the din. He went and reestablished the five Talmidim, and that what that did was, it transformed the whole din into Rachmim, which is why Lag BaOmer, again, such a day of tremendous bracha. Now, let's relate that back to Yaakov, and why specifically Lag BaOmer. Listen to this. So let's have a look in number 5 in the handouts. And I'll share with you a fascinating... You want to say something? Okay. I want to share with you a fascinating medrash quoted by the Daskenim of Bala Toises. Have a look at number 5. So you know, eventually, you know, Yaakov went down to Egypt, right? So Yaakov had a rough life, generally. He had one sort after another, right? And then his last thing was that Yosef was sold into slavery, he was missing. Yosef went down to Egypt. Okay. Says the Pasuk, he comes down to Egypt, and Yosef takes him and introduces him to Paro. So have a look at number 5. Vayomer Paro el Yaakov. Paro says to Yaakov, "Kamo yimei shneicha yecha? How old are you?" It's a funny question to ask someone. The first time I asked, why would Paro be interested in this? Okay. So the next Pasuk says, Vayomer Yaakov el Paro. Yaakov said to Paro, "Yimei shnei megurai. My days shloishim u'ma'ashana. I'm now 130. Ma'at v'roim, very few years relative to those times. Bad years. I've had a rough life. And I haven't even reached anywhere close to the age of my father and my grandfather." Okay, that's what Yaakov answered. Now we would never say this alone, but listen to what a medrash says. Okay, I'm going to quote for you. I didn't copy it, but I'll quote for you the Medrash. So one of the commentators of the Chumash is Daskenim Bala Toises from the Rishonim, and he quotes a Medrash, a fascinating Medrash. The Medrash says like this, that at the time when Yaakov said the words, "Ma'at v'royim hoyu," my life was rough and bad and little, Hashem said, this is what the Medrash says, Hashem said, "I saved you from Esav. I saved you from Lavan. I gave you back Dina after she got caught, kidnapped. I gave you back Yosef, now you finally discovered him. And you're complaining about a rough life?" Right? So therefore says the Medrash, that if you count up the letters in this Pasuk, there are 33 words in this paragraph. And therefore, Hashem said, "I'm going to take off 33 years from your life that you won't reach the same age as your father did." Yitzchak passed away when he was 180, and Yaakov only passed away when he was 147. So Yaakov passed away 133 years earlier than Yitzchak. Right? Okay. So what are we saying here? In other words, Yaakov, on his level, I mean, obviously for us this wouldn't be a problem, but if we fetch a little bit, it's okay, right? Because we've got a long way to go to have real emunah, real faith. But Yaakov Avinu, on his level, we know that Hashem is very strict with tzaddikim in their lack of bitachon, and lack of trust in Hashem, right? You know, sorry?
Why is he more strict with them than with us?
Because they hold a high standard.
Sorry? I say, thank goodness he is, but...
Because the way it works like this, right? So we found this by Yosef, for example. You know, Yosef got 2 extra years of prison. Why? He was 10 years in prison and another 2 years, because when he was in prison, he relied too much on the butler, right, to go and advocate for him. Hashem says, okay, you're relying on the course of nature, so we'll see what happens. Because bitachon means complete surrender to Hashem. Now, for regular people, Hashem understands that we are not on that level, so he says, okay, you have surrender, but you also have to rely a little bit on other things that you do as well, but you have to remember it all comes from Hashem. Okay. But tzaddikim, the greater person is, the greater the surrender to Hashem it has to be. Right, so Yaakov on his level. I mean, I'll give you an example. Right, there's a famous story of a chassid of the Magid of Mizrich. He came to Magid of Mizrich and he says he doesn't understand how the Gemara could say that you have to make a bracha on bad just like you make on good. Right? There's a bracha for bad, a bracha for good. The Gemara says you make them both with the same simcha and the same emunah, right? He says, I understand you can do that. So the Magid of Mizrish says, you know what you can do? If you go down to the base of Midrash, you'll see one of my students is learning there. His name is Zusha, Reb Zusha. Ask him the question. Okay. So he comes into the base of Midrash and he sees a guy who looks like he hasn't eaten for days. Reb Zusha was a very rough life. And his clothes were torn and looks like a real afflicted Jew. And he's sitting and learning. So he goes over to him and he says, is your name Zusha? He says, yeah. He says, the Magid sent me to ask you a question. He says, what's the question? He says, he tells the question. The Gemara says, the bad happens to you, good happens to you. You have to be able to bless Hashem both equally. And I'm struggling with this. I said, that's possible. He says, I think you're not the wrong person. I don't think the Magid meant me. He says, no. You, Zusha, I mean, it must be you. I mean, the Magid sent me to this shul, to this base medrash, and you're the only guy here that's named Zusha. You must be the right person. He says, I really don't understand. It can't be me. He says, why not? He says, I can't believe that the Magid would send me with such a question because nothing bad ever happened to me in my life. That's what he said. Okay, so That's great. Big tzaddikim could be like that. And big tzaddikim are expected to be like that, right? We not, because even the Gemara that talks to us, that tells us we have to make brachas for good and for bad the same way, it's still a separate bracha, you know that. It's not the same bracha, right? We don't say shkoyach for bad. We say, I acknowledge Hashem is the true judge. That's what we say, right? Whereas for good, we say atov ametiv. And for regular people, we feel bad. But we often have, obviously, we have these role models to understand that everything ultimately comes from Hashem. And therefore, we have to aspire to at least have the same faith and resilience and so on and so forth. Okay, that's true, right? But tzaddikim are supposed to be taka at that level. And sometimes tzaddikim, if they're missing a little bit, Hashem is not happy with it, right? So Yaakov Avinu, everything was Hashem. Yaakov Avinu was the biggest tzaddik, right? But somehow he, on his level, I mean, it's hard to say on a good tzaddik, but we don't understand, we're not even that, don't come to anywhere near them, but at his level, he slipped over here a little bit by commenting that he had a rough life. On his level, there was a problem. And because of that, he was 33 years were taken away from him. And, right, okay. Now, Yaakov Avinu obviously wanted to fix that, right? And he wanted to learn from that. That's what a tzaddik does. A tzaddik doesn't complain when Hashem is not happy. A tzaddik improves, and a tzaddik obviously fixes that. So now we found an amazing thing. You know, we say Shema every day, right? I hope you are with me. It's like a lot of different things, right? It all come together in a minute. Every day we say Shema. Where does Shema come from? So it's Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu told the Shema to the Jewish people. But actually, according to the Medrash, Shema is an earlier source. And the earlier source was from Yaakov Avinu. It comes from Yaakov. And the story of Yaakov. At the end of Yaakov's life, he gathered together his children. Famous story. And he wanted to tell them, right? And he wanted to tell them, Yaakov was going to reveal to his children when the end of time will be, when Mashiach will come, and Hashem didn't let him, and he wasn't sure why the Shekhinah suddenly left him. He thought maybe his children are not properly believing in Hashem, maybe there's something wrong with them. He thought they all tzaddikim, but he didn't know. So he asked them about it, and they said, no, we're 100% right, we're okay. And they said these words, Shema Yisrael, listen, Yisrael is Yaakov, his name was Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Elokeinu, we 100% believe in God, right? So, to which Yaakov Avinu responded, Baruch Shem Ko Bachot Olam Ved, which is why we have Baruch Shem afterwards, right? Okay. And then the Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu then instructed, he says, that formula, Shema Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu said, this is what should be, Yidden should say this every single day, right? And it says that every single day, Yaakov Avinu, when he hears the Yidden say Shema Yisrael, in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, where Yaakov Avinu is buried, he says Shema Yisrael too. That's what the Medrash says. Now, what's so special about Shema Yisrael? Shema Yisrael, we know, is the statement of our emunah, correct? It's the sentence of faith in God that Yidden always lived and died by throughout all generations. What does it say? So one of the things that the Noida Behuda says, that Slach says, explains like this, and so one of the ideas how we express our emunah in Shema Yisrael is, we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. What's that formula, Hashem Elokeinu? So we know in the names of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, is the name of Chesed, the name of Rachamim, right? Elokeinu is the name of Din, the name of judgment. Elokim is Din, right? How do we express our Amunah? Real Amunah means Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That whether it's Chesed or whether it's Din, it's Hashem Echad, it's one God. Everything comes from Hashem, everything has a purpose, everything is for the good. Right? Now, just to clarify, obviously we always daven only for revealed good, which we should do. That's what Hashem wants us to do. But if, God forbid, something happens to a person that's not so good, we accept it, and that's what the Gemara says. We have to make the bracha exactly the same. Which, by the way, the Gemara learns this bracha, learns this concept out of the sentence that comes right after the Shema, which says, "V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, you should love Hashem your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your body." The Gemara says that means you have to withhold your whole being, you have to love Hashem. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's going well, it's not going well. Why? Because Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Whether it's Hashem or it's Elokeinu, it's Hashem Echad, it's one God. It's one merciful God. Right? So therefore, Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed, he's telling his children, you have to say the Shema. Why? He says, we have to set into motion the tikkun, the fixing of the problem that I had. I, on a subtle level, was lacking in this concept. I described my life as ma'at v'royim, I described my life as bad. Yeah. So I now am on a mission to strengthen this concept. And that's why Yaakov says, the saying of Shema Yisrael comes from Yaakov, because Yaakov says, I lost 33 years because of this. So you didn't have to work on this amunah that Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is all one. And the other thing is bad. Now again, we aspire to that level. We're not on that level exactly, but the concept we have to inculcate, right? Now, why 33 years? And who fixed this? Mainly Rabbi Akiva, on Lag BaOmer. Right? So listen to this. First of all, this idea that everything is for the good, we find about Rabbi Akiva in an amazing way. First of all, Rabbi Akiva was a famous thing. Rabbi Akiva used to say, one of Rabbi Akiva's favorite sayings was, "Kol mad ovid rachman al tav ovid." Whatever Hashem does is for the good, right? Famous story with Rabbi Akiva that he once went to a town. You know the story? He once went to a town and he had a donkey and a rooster and a candle, right? And he went into the town and he asked for somewhere to stay. And no one in the town let him stay. They were a very cruel town. He said, whatever Hashem does for the good. So he went and stayed in the field. So he had at least a donkey so he can travel, and then he had a candle that he can learn Torah, and he had a rooster to wake him up in the morning so he can get up in the morning and serve Hashem. Starts to learn, the candle went out. He said, whatever Hashem does for the good. A cat came and ate the chicken. He said, whatever Hashem does for the good. Suddenly a lion came and devoured the donkey. Whatever Hashem does for good. He was left out there in the field. Nothing, no candle, no donkey, no rooster, just himself in an open field. Got up in the morning, and he sees there's a whole tumult. What happened that morning? He was just outside the town. That night, bandits came into the town and ransacked the town. She says, "No, you see, it's much for the good, right? Had he been there, had the candle alerted the attention of the bandits to him, had the rooster, the donkey made a noise, he would have been in trouble. So Hashem protected him, and that was the thing, right? So we see with Rabbi Akiva, we see there's so many places. We see this idea that he doesn't bring this, but he sees at the end. We see at the end of Makkos when they went to the After destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, a bunch of colleagues of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva went to visit the destruction, the Temple Mount that was destroyed, and they all cried, and he laughed. Not that he didn't feel the pain, he felt the pain, but he said, "Ask him why he's laughing." He says, "Because now that the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, I see the prophecy of redemption is definitely going to come." And as the Mefarshim explained, he saw the destruction as a part of the rebuilding. In other words, he saw it as another stage in the rebuilding, he only saw good. And that's why on his deathbed, right? On his deathbed, which wasn't a deathbed, he was brutally tortured to death. And as he was dying, his Talmidim, his disciples, saw that he was smiling. And the Gemara says, they asked him, "How can you smile this time?" He says, "My whole life I've been wishing to give up my life for Hashem. I wanted to fulfill the pasuk of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, you love Hashem your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your..." And now I'm fulfilling it. He saw it as a thing. Your behavior was all right. So he reached the ultimate level of surrender. And he fixed that concept that Yaakov subtly was missing. He brought it into the Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and he embodied the concept of Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Now, here's two amazing things where all the numbers come into it, all comes together. First of all, there's an unbelievable connection between Yaakov and Rabbi Akiva. Have a look at number 6. So I'm not going to go through the whole pasuk. It's a complicated pasuk. It's where Hashem was giving, where Yaakov was giving the blessings to his children. But there's a pasuk which refers to Yaakov as Avir Yaakov, The strength of Yaakov. See that? The mighty one of Yaakov. Take the letters of Avir Yaakov. Yeah? Avir Yaakov, you turn around the letters, you'll make the two words Rabbi Akiva. Okay? See that? You have the Reish, the Beis, the Yud, and you have Akiva, the Ayin Kuf, Veis and Aleph. Okay, Rabbi Akiva. Seder HaDoiroi says, in the name of the Arizal, that we find that's why there's a lot of similarities. Yaakov Avinu shepherded the flock of his father-in-law. Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd. He worked for Kalba Savua, who became his father-in-law. That was all story. His daughter saw him working there, right? Yaakov Avinu had two main wives, Rachel and Leah. Rabbi Akiva also had two wives, Rachel. The first one was Rachel. And then there was the wife of Trunus Rufus. Trunus was a very, very wicked man who died, and then his wife converted and later married Rabbi Akiva. Doesn't say that. But says the Arizal that Rachel, the first wife of Rabbi Akiva, her neshama was connected to Rachel, the wife of Yaakov, and Rabbi Akiva himself was a spark of Yaakov Avinu, which also fits in, by the way, that Yaakov Avinu was all about Torah, because we say Yaakov Avinu was set in the tents of Torah and learned in Yeshiva. His whole thing was Torah, right? Yaakov Avinu was the idea of Torah, as we say in the Mefarshim, and Rabbi Akiva was Torah. Rabbi Akiva was the Torah Shvapa, right? So therefore, Rabbi Akiva was fixing this concept of he was the one, he was the Rabbi, he was the Yaakov, the spark of Yaakov, that had to complete what Yaakov was subtly missing and had to bring the full fulfillment of what Yaakov began, talked about at the end of his life, the Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Now, go to number 7. We say Rabbi Akiva had to bring to fruition the concept of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right? How many letters are there in the sentence of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad?
Six.
Sorry?
Six.
There's, hold on. No, it's not, hold on, give me 1 second here. Oh, here we go. Twenty-five letters. Right? Now, we know that when we see that in the Shema Yisrael, there's the Chassam Sofer, a different place says this. There's 25 letters, right? However, the two names of Hashem, right, we say it differently. We don't say the way it's written, correct? We know that. Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, we say instead Aleph Nun Dalad Yud, which is, right, Ador and Nai, right? So the two names of Hashem are really, they're four letters each, but they're really eight letters because we read it, we see it's written four letters, but there's another four letters which we say. 25 and 8 is 33. Yeah? Number one. Then there's two letters in the Shema which are big. You know that? You aware of that? You know the Torah, we have sometimes big letters and sometimes small letters. There's average letters and small letters. Throughout the whole Tanakh, at least once, each letter of the Aleph Beis is either big or small, right? It's a whole Kabbalistic thing also. Which are the two letters that are big in Shema? The Ayin and the Dalet. Gal, Eid. Gal, which is the heap of stars that Yaakov Avinu built, right? Eid is the testimony. Yeah? Comes Rabbi Akiva on Lag BaOmer. The 33 years that was missing from Yaakov Avinu, and he fixes it and he turns it around into what Yaakov Avinu started to ward off the judgment of Lavan by building a Gal Eid, the Lamed Gimel, the whole heap of stones, to be a symbol. And what Rabbi Akiva does is he brings it to fruition, he brings it to perfection by fixing that which was missing from Yaakov Avinu, that little bit of bitach, a little bit of surrender that was missing from Yaakov Avinu, and he fixes it by living and embodying the whole concept of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He does it on Lag BaOmer. What is the idea, as we said before? On Lag BaOmer, he doesn't give up. He doesn't see that the 24,000 Talmidim is the end of the story and desolation and despondency and just giving up and finish. No, he moves on. He sees it as just another step in the right direction. He sees it as something good. He sees it as his mission to keep rebuilding. Right? That's how he was doing, because Rabbi Akiva was the ultimate level of surrender to Hashem, where Hashem Elokeinu is all Hashem Echad, it's all one thing. And therefore, unlike Ba'omer, Pasku Lamus, they stopped dying, which means stopped dying means they didn't die because he went and kept on rebuilding. The journey continued, the survival of Torah continued. And he went, and by doing that, he lived, he showed how you live the concept of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And therefore, he brought the Gal Eid. That Gal Eid, that heap of stones, which is a symbol, which is in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, with the 33 letters, and the Ayin and Dalet, which is now Gal Eid, what Yaakov Avinu started to do when he built that original thing, which was to ward off the din, the judgment, and the negativity which is in the world, which Lavan wanted to bring upon, he completed that process, and therefore transformed the whole concept of din to Rachamim on the day of Lag Ba'omer. And that explains this idea of why that reason given for Lag Ba'omer is such a reason for celebration. Pasku Lamut, they stopped dying. What does it mean they stopped dying? It means they never died. It means the journey continued. And the proper bitachon, and then for the idea of rachamim and celebration was brought into the world. And that's the celebrate. That's one idea of the celebration of Lag Ba'omer. Okay, I hope you follow that.